Beautiful day. I think we have been so fortunate, so blessed with the weather. So how are you doing? Everyone's still alive? Okay. Okay, good. During this series of talks that Kate and I have been focusing on listening as the Dharma Gate, and gradually kind of going back in time. You know, Kate started with contemporary artists, people who have really devoted their lives to listening. And then we shifted to look at people like Hakuin Zenji and some of the earlier ancestors, and then a little bit further back to look at Dogen. So we've been exploring what our ancestors said about listening and how we might use their advice in our own practice. And today, I'd like us to consider the great Bodhisattva of listening, Avalokiteshvara. In Chinese, Guanyin or Kuan Yin. In Japanese, Kanzeon or Kannon. And maybe you've seen the statue here is Avalokiteshvara, Chinese version. I think we're all familiar with Avalokiteshvara, at least from our chanting in the Heart Sutra, if nothing else. Because she's the one who's instructing Shariputra, one of the original followers of the Buddha, instructing him about form and about emptiness. The Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara is speculated to have been absorbed into the Mahayana tradition from one of the Hindu avatars or manifestations of the divine, perhaps Vishnu or Shiva. And originally, Avalokiteshvara was clearly male in depiction. But as Buddhism moved from India into China in the 5th century, Avalokiteshvara underwent transformation into a female form, a female bodhisattva. And this really makes sense, knowing a little bit about Chinese culture, because Avalokiteshvara is the embodiment of complete and perfect compassion, reflecting some of the virtues found in the Chinese Taoist female deities. But we should know that all of the archetypal bodhisattvas, like Avalokiteshvara, Manjushri, Samantabhadra, etc., they are more or less androgynous. In other words, they alter form according to the need at the moment. So the name Avalokiteshvara is translated into Chinese and Japanese in several ways. But the meaning, the original meaning of the Sanskrit, is roughly one who perceives the sounds. One who perceives the sounds. Implying, of course, one who hears the cries of distress of this world. One very well-known translator wanted to make very clear the meaning of the name and translated Avalokiteshvara as she who perceives the world's lamentations. She who perceives the world's lamentations. And surely this world has so much pain and suffering, so many lamentations, so many cries of distress going up. I find the meaning of her name very, very moving, because the act of listening, of careful listening, in and of itself is so profoundly healing. And not long after Kate and I moved back from Japan to Canada, I volunteered at the Lionsgate Hospice for a while. And I remember after my training, the first few months being on the hospice floor, as really being kind of a strain, a challenge, because I felt I should be doing something. You know, I should be fetching bits of ice or little bits of ice cream or something, or massaging people's feet or making people comfortable in some way, or speaking a kind word to visitors. But often, really, there was nothing to do. The people on the ward were often asleep or drowsy. And I soon realized that asking patients, you know, can I do this or can I get that, all too often was really just coming out of my own nervousness. You know, the need to be busy, not sure what to do with myself. And slowly, I learned that what was most helpful was just to be there, to sit quietly, and if the person I was with wanted to talk, then I would listen. I would listen carefully. Otherwise, sometimes I would just sit and listen to them breathe, as if, well, either they were asleep or in a daze. Or sometimes I would just sit in the room and read quietly if they were awake and just wanted me there while they dozed and came back and dozed again. I came to understand that really attentive presence and listening have a kind of mysterious power, a power that heals or brings ease to our discomfort and pain. And it works both ways. The person who's being listened to as well as the person who's listening. Have you noticed in this retreat a sense of ease as you get engaged in listening to this place? I find that the more I listen deeply, the more I feel a sense of belonging. In the Mahayana tradition, there are many, many Buddhist texts that discuss the powers and virtues of all the bodhisattvas, but particularly Avalokiteshvara. She's mentioned a lot. And amongst those, perhaps the most influential in all of East Asia, is the Shurangama Sutra. You heard of that one? Some people have. Yeah. Not most people haven't. This text is not very well known in the West, in part because it's only been translated relably recently into European languages. And I think it's kind of difficult to understand without either a skilled teacher or someone like that who can explain the references and some of the vague areas. And the only known source for this text is in Chinese. So scholars speculate that the origin of this text is in China, that it wasn't composed originally, you know, somewhere in India way back, but it's developed and written in China. But nevertheless, newly ordained Zen, or Chan as it's known in Chinese, Zen monks and nuns in China and Japan from the very medieval times were expected to study deeply and carefully the Shurangama Sutra, because it offers many practical ways to practice. And there are many commentaries in Chinese about the Surangama Sutra. And it continues today to be a key text that the Chinese Chan monks and nuns study very carefully. Now, it's a long sutra concerned with practices and problems that can arise as the practitioner follows the Buddha way. But it begins with a rather funny and I think rather charming story of how the Buddha, well, at a great gathering, becomes aware through his psychic powers that his cousin and attendant Ananda is about to be seduced by a young courtesan who is in love with him. And of course, Ananda is a monk. And so once again, exercising his psychic powers to send help, the Buddha saves Ananda from breaking his vow of celibacy. And then the rest of the sutra is a little more boring. It focuses on a rather extended dialogue between the Buddha and Ananda and other key players in the sutra about ways to practice. At one point, during this long kind of dialogue, this long conversation, the topic turns to the senses and how the senses, which are so often a source of our suffering and delusion, can be used to awaken, used as a point of practice. And amongst the assembly, because there's many people kind of present at this place, there are 25 arhats and bodhisattvas. In other words, people deeply experienced in their practice. And the Buddha asks each of them to describe the Dharma gate that led to their particular deep insights. So they all go and go through all these series of ways to practice, right, which are all wonderful. And the final speaker is Avalokiteshvara. So according to the legend, Avalokiteshvara was many eons ago dwelling on an island and listening to the sound of waves washing up against the shore and the rocks. That was her practice. Listening with full attention, listening free of commentary, the sound of the waves and the silence that fell in between blended, and then slowly each became simply silence. And then even the silence disappeared. And that was her awakening. So here's what her words, what she spoke to the assembly as she was describing a little bit about her practice. She said, "I entered into the stream of the self nature of hearing and thereby eliminated the sound of what is heard. I then proceeded from this inner stillness, both sounds and silence ceased to arise. Advancing in this way, both hearing and what was heard melted away and disappeared. When hearing what is heard, when hearing and what is heard are both forgotten, the sense of hearing leaves no impression in the mind. So Avalokiteshvara's method is another way of turning our attention inward, just as we've been doing. Just as perhaps we do back in our own practice at home with our breath. Giving all of our awareness energy to the faculty of hearing. Just listening, gradually and completely, letting go of all commentary. In this way of meditation, both the subject and the object dropped away. The person listening and the sound, gone. As Dogen wrote, and I think, can't remember if it was Kate or me mentioned this, one of our talks, everyone's heard this before, to study the self is to forget the self. Oh, yeah, but I'm just... To forget the self is to be actualized by the myriad things. When actualized by the myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the body and minds of others, drop away, and no trace of realization remains. And this no trace continues endlessly. Now, listening to sounds, Avalokiteshvara tells us, will lead us to the stillness at the core of everything. An experience of oneness. But even that, Dogen warns us, needs to be let go. Right? No trace. Even that, oneness. Pretty cool. We let go. So with this deep listening practice of Avalokiteshvara, the reflex to make distinctions weakens and temporarily drops away. In that moment, you are no longer pushed and pulled by the assumptions, emotions, reactions, aversions, and desires. Deep listening leads us to the spaces between our sufferings. Listening to sounds trains us so we can listen to our thoughts in the same way. We learn to listen to the gaps between the thoughts. We learn to listen to our thinking with the same freedom from involvement or identification that we would have listening to the wind or listening to the ambient sounds here in the Zendo. With this practice, we let go, finally, of our ongoing internal argument with the world and no longer hold so tightly to our ready answers. Here's a story of a Chinese monk, Hanshan Deqing, who lived during the Ming Dynasty, which is about 400 years ago. He writes this. And by the way, he was following the practice outlined in the Shurangama Sutra. Hoping to master this technique, I went to a wooden bridge every day and tried to listen to the water without thinking about it or anything else. At first, all I could hear was noise. My mind kept thinking. But after a little practice, my mind began to settle down. Then, one day, when my thoughts had ceased to surge like the water, I became so immersed in the sound that I forgot myself. The noise and my existence were gone. Serenity enveloped my mind. And after that, whenever I heard a sound that previously would have annoyed me, all I had to do was concentrate on that sound without mentally grasping it, and I would be lulled into the same serene state. In this practice, as Hanshan writes here, when we follow sound fully, when we follow sound carefully, we reach the end of our small logic and reach the end of our hardened views. And Hanshan Deqing had a great awakening, which he also wrote about. And this is how he described it. He writes, one day, while I was walking, I happened to stop and stand still. And in that blissful moment, I entered samadhi. Soon, I ceased to be aware of anything except a great brightness, round and full, clean and still. like a huge round mirror, mountains, rivers, and the great earth itself appeared. To be empty of self is to hear the soundless sound, to see the invisible sight, to think the thoughtless thought. That's what he wrote. The soundless sound. What might that be? Perhaps here the rocks and moss can tell us if we listen to them. So let's go back to the Shurangama Sutra for a little bit. So once all these